All right, I'm really going to stick my neck out now and do something that I'm not quite sure whether it's beneficial or detrimental. It's a little on the lighter side. So just
tell people the features.
Yeah, for $20.
As long as you're close to that, we're all right. No harm.
I want to do some discussions about the mind dimension and try to do this visually for you. And first, I want to thank Andre Weimer for doing a couple of these drawings for me. She has a tremendous patience for working with me and doing this. If I were to characterize it, I may call it the diagram of fools, because really I've taken something very simple and tried to convert it into something for the mind to grasp, and that's what we all want, right? Something very complex. But as you know, the correct interpretation of the final answer would be something that wouldn't be in a drawing or words or symbols. And I like Bob's Bob and I had corresponded by email, and I showed this to him a couple months ago, and he said, it really is an attempt by the relative mind to satisfy its need for containing in symbols that which is beyond the symbols and beyond the mind itself. In a very real sense, Aquinas is saying that the finite mind will never perceive the infinite is absolutely true. Now, Rose used to say that because it stopped him. Now, if you think about that, then you just give up the search. Say, this is hopeless, I'll never get it. But on the other hand, it really is true that the mind can't penetrate this. So what I'll do is just go through a couple of these drawings, and if there is some way to picture what the absolute might be, it would take the sheet of paper, and there would be a dimension. It would be dimensionless. It would stretch in all directions without any part of you there. So it would be a pure awareness, a no thing. But to use Rose's terms, he had a coalescing of the absolute from, you know, out here, although the absolute would penetrate all things and would be the source of all things, to the unmanifested mind. And the unmanifested mind is represented here in this kind of a diaphanous shell where the light is coalescing into, and I'll describe this in a little more detail, but it's coalescing into the inner egg, which is the manifested mind. And the manifested mind, in turn, would have 6.5 billion portals up from the unmanifest into the manifested mind. So if we were to take this egg-shaped part, and this drove Andre crazy because I have a two-dimensional thing on here with a dotted line, and I'm trying to represent a three-dimensional. She said, can't do that. Artists don't do that. But so this is the unmanifested mind, this dashed line. So if we were to take this and peel it away and peer inside the manifested mind, we would see the portals from the unmanifest, which again is not mind substance, and I'll describe this in a bit, where the light for the absolute would go down into the funnel of awareness. And of course, as you get closer to the individual's mind, the veil between your individual mind and what you truly are grows. I mean, that barrier, so to speak. So these would be three individuals coming into the mind dimension. And so the next one is what you have in your handout without labels. And I just go back to what the, you know, just again, the absolute. Nothing in the diagram, of course, would exist without the absolute, without the light of the absolute. And in your handout, I put down there in the lower left-hand corner some descriptions of what that might be. So it would be pure awareness, a boundless, unreflected, no thing that exists in itself. And it is the source of all things. There's, you know, what else can be said? So we'll just leave it at that, because I guess the take-home message will be there's no sense in trying to describe that with words. The unmanifested mind, which again is this, the light from the absolute starting to coalesce into the unmanifested mind. And Rose wrote a lot about the mind dimension and the unmanifested in the Alvagen system, psychology of the observer, direct mind experience. But he wrote this little essay, and I'm not sure at what point he wrote it, because it's undated, called The Mind. And here's, I think it's important because the unmanifested mind is something that you sense right now. It is the awareness that drives the universe, yet it is the viewer. That would be, in Rose's term, the unmanifested. And here's some descriptions he used. The projection that animates the whole picture of creation, as well as every cell in our bodies, we will call light. This light begins beyond the unmanifested mind. The unmanifested mind acts as a sort of prism that separates the differentiated rays from the undifferentiated source. Do not get the idea that this projected picture is correct. It is looked upon as illusion. While presuming the unmanifested mind to be more real, it is beaming a pure light through a very cloudy medium. And that's the... he often said that life is created at the synapses, between, you know, the gaps between the synapses, where the electric... That was his system of tension. Life is a system of tension. So the gap where the electrochemical arc is occurring, there was tension between the neurons. And that's what he means by, like, a cloud. Mike and I were talking about this last night. The cloudy medium is your nerve structure, your brain chemistry. The unmanifested mind is the first experience reality, or the first plateau which we rest upon when reaching for reality. The unmanifested mind is more real than our individual mind. The aspirant to cosmic consciousness may come to believe that the light that comes from the unmanifested mind actually comes through that medium or matrix also, while its true origin is the absolute. Our true umbilical cord is toward the absolute, beyond the womb matrix of the unmanifested mind. And he says there is only isness. So let me go back to the diagram and the handout that you have. These are some of my words that might describe the unmanifested. So it's separation of the unmanifested from the absolute is, again, I represent it as kind of that diaphanous shell that was around the inner shell. And until death, we are always in constant contact with the unmanifested. It is that which breathes life into us. Our individual mind and the manifested mind color our perspective of the unmanifested mind. And our ability to feel it is kind of inversely proportional to the grip of the mind outward. So the more you're out here, wrapped up in your drama of life, the less you feel the unmanifested. But what we're, and you've heard this all weekend, you're trying to turn around, and by turning around or shining the light of awareness on what you think you are, tends to diminish that grip. You're trying to find your true source, and the awareness really is kind of your way home. And I have a couple of descriptive notes there in your handout. It is undifferentiated awareness. It is unwitnessable by the mind. The mind can never penetrate back into this awareness. It is a transformer of a more powerful awareness, and it is the cradle of creation. What happens here? This is a kind of a flip of the, you've always heard about the ray of the sun and the ray of light and your individual rays. This is kind of my take on it. So the light is coming in, and there is a still point of awareness that you perceive as your own in the center. And our individual minds are here, but interacting with the manifested mind. And our thoughts and feelings are affected by, and we affect others. That's kind of how some of this interaction is occurring with other people. The perception is that you are in here creating this, like the dust storm around the essential part of you. So the manifested mind is everything that has happened or will happen is already done. It's already occurred. It's trapped, you know, it's in the manifested mind. And it's swirling around the still point. And you think, wow, I could see that activity outside of me. You know, I'm causing that activity. And that's the projection reflection that's interacting with the manifested mind. Where in fact, nothing has happened because there is contact with the unmanifested mind, which is kind of in the center of this manifested mind. So what that might explain when I look across to you and you see a point of awareness and I see a point of awareness, it's still all coming from us, but we share one unmanifested awareness that is all the same. So I have a couple notes here. For the manifested mind is the entire space-time realm. It does not exist without awareness. It is a witnessable concourse of all souls, and it is entirely illusory.
That is true. Manifested mind is the witnessable concourse?
Yes. It is witnessable concourse of all souls. So that's why, you know, you would have 6.5 billion souls in this.
That's
mind.
Us.
Yes, that would be us. That would be the mind matrix. As long as, I guess to take back to Jacob's ladder, as long as you could be stuck out here in your dust storm and never conceive of anything, there's probably nobody in this room, and never conceive of anything else in life. But if you take a step inward, you would see, you begin to watch this activity from some viewpoint that's different. And if you are aware of awareness, you know still point. But yet, you look across and see another still point, and you think, that's my awareness, that's my individuality, and that's the falseness that grips the final advanced seeker or whatever, somebody who's done a lot of introspection. That's the final fallacy that will fall, and I'm convinced that that's taken away from you. If you get to the point where you're aware of awareness and that's all that's left, that's not your choice when you come out here and you realize that there is nothing of you.
It's kind of a paradox, isn't it? You realize there's nothing of you. I mean, is that after the fact?
Yeah, it goes back to Mike Connor's dilemma yesterday. What realizes? That's a mystery to me.
Realizes is.
Yeah, what
realizes is. Because you can't have someone doing realizing, but realizes is.
Yes, and what... what is mysterious to me is what aspect, there was no part of you there. There being, again, words, but there is no there. But if there is a disillusion of the individual, why is there a memory of it? Mike and I were talking about this last night, and Mike had a good perspective. It's just we're hardwired, and it's our nerve system, and even though that's an illusion, you know, we're back here in the illusion, and that's the memory is an illusion. So there's a retained memory of it too.
Go over an impression, or a flavor, or smell, or something.
Something burned into the nervous system. That's digressing. That's why I struggled to show this. I'm not sure what value it has to you. I thought maybe if somebody was visually oriented, they would have a different perspective as a result of seeing it. Maybe. Again, I'm trying to stick a pebble in your shoe. And the last thing I have here is I want to spend about 5 or 10 minutes talking about questions that seem to be common. It seems like when everybody has had an experience in TAT, you know, through the years, going back to 2000, the question is, what happened in the months, you know, leading up to your realization? That's invariable. And I understand that people are looking for the mechanics of what possibly could trigger something in themselves. Of course, as soon as they tell you their experience, it negates that from ever happening to you. So the mechanics are totally, you cannot duplicate them. But let me, and you know, you guys can also chime in on this if you have some other thoughts. I'm not going to talk about strategies, but I want to say is these are the commonalities. And they must arise of their own accord. Again, you're not going to create this. So these are what I see as traits. A tremendous fear, or a small battle with fear of the death of our individuality. You may face it, and you may have a moment of panic and run away from it. However, what might at first seem like a total defeat because of your perhaps not ready or whatever the problem was, could in fact be a small victory, because the next time that happens, if you have a moment of fear of your death and it knocks you away from something deeper happening, you may be ready for the battle next time. So this is another trait, a total collapse of the ego, often caused by extreme tension or monumental despair, the dark night of the soul. This came up a couple times yesterday, and again I had this all written out before the weekend. Praying for help, which is a form of surrender or an act of desperation. We acknowledge that our individual self is really not in control of finding our true source. And this does not mean that we coast. There's no surrender until that is taken away from you. And Rose said, we fight like hell, but we don't give a damn. So if it comes, if help comes on your path, even if it's a small bit of help, be thankful. So the prayer is a good, as you heard yesterday, a good way to give yourself, you're praying to yourself. Getting serious. This is one that seems to be a common theme. But you protest, I am serious. And my question is, really, are you serious? And this would be some questions to you. Have you accepted the fact that the spiritual search is a lifelong commitment, a choice that you can never turn your back on? Have you expressed immense frustration or experienced deep despair over not knowing who you truly are? Have you experienced anger over your inability to remain on the path, or anger over why truth can't simply reveal itself? You know, what the hell is this? Once and for all, show me. Have you wept when reading books about or listening to those who are self-realized, wanting to know at all costs what they know? Have you expressed a deep desire to find the answer which sets the wheels irrevocably in motion? Have you truly decided that you don't want to die without knowing who you are with absolute certainty? So those are a couple of pebbles in your shoes. I'll just close here by saying that I've said this before, I think in some of the notes I wrote, but I would offer this bit of encouragement to friends and fellow seekers. You want to think you might not have what it takes. And Rose was good at doing that, but by all means doubt everything that's been said this weekend, except believe, you know, don't doubt your ability. Don't doubt your ability to see. And if you truly long to see, then as Rose says, you have a conviction. This is not a passing inclination. And that's all I have. I thought during the break, the words get in the way. I mean, I've said a lot of words. I don't know how effective it is, but I thought we could, you know, if we want to sit, we could have a rapport sitting. And I could just read a little piece. For those of you that don't know what rapport is, you're basically just being quiet with the mind, you know, talking, and just feeling fellows sitting in a room. And it was what Rose called a rapport sitting. There's no, I don't want to add or color your impression of what rapport is, but what we could do, we could take a break, and if those that don't want to sit in rapport can leave, then maybe we can arrange chairs in a circle for those that want to sit. You guys want to ask questions, or what do you prefer to do now?
I've got a question before we break. And
okay.
If the report's right, for half the guys in the room, why? Why does the absolute manifest?
God has a sense of humor.
Or lack thereof.
Well, you know, the only thing I could say, and I'm maybe just using somebody else's words, is for God to know that it needs a reflection. But I don't. When
half,
none of it.
That's a stopping point for half the guys that I talk to, anyway. They want to know why. So, if you can give them a reason why, then we can move on.
So make it up.
Yeah, make up a good one.
Yeah. Which is the first one. God has a sense of humor. Why you got to tell good puns?
Question is just a distraction, though, really, isn't it?
I think.
It's not the final question.
Yeah, I mean, you just spend your whole lifetime, you know, yeah, putting energy into why, and get to the end and go, well, I still don't know, and I'm where I was 50 years ago.
Not any wiser now.
Yeah.
Phil, I was thinking I'm probably going to go home and look at this and do it, you know, what the hell's going on? And what mistakes do you think I'm going to make when I try to look at this, and try to figure it out?
You will make the mistake of trying to figure it out. You're going to try to apply the mind's limitations to something that will not, no amount of thinking will get you there. But paradoxically, I think thinking, trying to get to the root of the problem, is back to the resistor. It's like you just keep applying energy to this search, and eventually the mind says, you know, I've had it, and it becomes, the resistor burns out. So that's the Rose analogy. I mean, there are two camps, one being, which I disagree with, you're already awareness, so why do anything you can't do anything. But
this is as good as it gets, theory.
Yes, like Tony Parsons and some of those other people that say there's no system. But the system is continuing to study or continuing to figure out, you know, the problem, keeping your mind on the problem. So study that diagram, I guess, and maybe when you put it down and stop thinking about it, you might get the truer answer.
Well, one couple that's been put in my shoe is kind of this manifested mind
area where you said it's all already happened, like in that sense. So in other words, people who found the truth were always going to, people who haven't, you know, all that stuff's kind of already laid out. It's just not like going along this line to realize, you know, reach that point or not. Or, that's kind of a pebble in the shoe for me.
If everything was destiny, then there would be no. You're going to discover the truth whether you apply yourself or not, and that would be a.
Well, and you're going to apply yourself or not, if you're going to apply yourself or not, and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So that goes back to having will. Whether do we really have will, or is everything just happening around us, regardless of what we do? And Rose said, and I agree with this. You have to act. That goes back to the doubt everything except your ability. You have to have will. And the will is, in this case, applying it to your search. So you have to act as though you do control your destiny. Otherwise, I could very well see somebody using that to say, give up, go have the whiskey.
Yeah. See, in the minor, that always comes back to, well, then they were always going to do that because everything's already laid out. Whether they were going to, even this whole conversation right now and me deciding whether or not I want to just give up because of that, that was all going to happen. You know, all that. It's kind of like, that's a big pebble.
You have no choice but to act.
Yeah. Or live a vegetative life.
Well, doesn't that really just point back to, well, if you're doing what your deepest desire is, you might have found out your deepest desire was to drink the whiskey anyway. So you're doing what you were designed to do anyway. So why worry?
And if I worry, it's because it's everything.
Yeah. If you worry, you were designed to worry.
Yeah. Well, I don't care about it, man.
What's the point of asking that question? What's the point of trying to find out in advance if you have the willpower or not? I was just asking why.
It could be a distraction.
They can have an excuse not to continue.
Well, it's a con. If anything else, they're talking about that we could burn out the resistors by even thinking about that. Like everything, even now, you were not saying. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you know that, or do you believe in that?
Well, based on what Phil said, I don't know. Personally, yeah. I don't know, but saying that made the.
So maybe it would be helpful for you to try to find whether that's true for yourself or not. So instead of believing, Phil saying that there is destiny, or I don't think Phil said that, but anyway, maybe you could try to actually figure out whether that's really true or not.
Yeah, make that really take a chance and look at it. Or maybe not. What's the point of that question? How would it
go? You got your conscience back there. You have no choice but to ask that. Not even.
We're on until you're asking it. So.
Well, it's just an interesting thing that here we are all seeking, and then there's people have reported that. That's not the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, but
David Skoma says if you're on a trajectory for this, you're going to find it. If not, you won't. And it's like.
But you don't know whether you're on that trajectory or not.
Yeah. Right.
You have to act as though you are.
This idea of there not being a system, there's at least this much of a system. You're not going to see it if you don't look. Somebody tells you there's a beautiful sky above, and they say, all you got to do is turn your head up and you'll see it. And then someone else says, well, it's there whether you look or not, so you don't need to look. Mm. Why not? You won't see it if you don't look. So.
But whether I look or not is not up to me. It's all already done in this manifested mind.
I want to knock you down on your back.
the manifested mind is what you see right now. It has nothing to do with the future.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking of it as time.
It's facts right now. That's the manifested mind.
Yeah, I know.
Sure. That could be a personal coincidence for why it may be not to propel him forward. Until he gets sick of it, or until it plays itself out.
Well, that's already laid out too, if it will or will not. So it's the fact that that's.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think if you truly believe that, you wouldn't be here. So you and I don't even know. You wouldn't get out of bed in the morning.
You could say that my coming here at night, but that's not my call. That's one of my reasons.
You're not born. You don't have a point. One of these points of awareness occurs. think.
If you're not born?
Yes. Oh, man.
Yeah, I think just what I was saying.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah. I don't know, it doesn't make any sense. But
who said it yesterday? Was it you that said God keeps producing more and more points of awareness, keeps trying? There's so many failures.
Such a failure.
Well, what it comes down to is acting in the face of absurdity. Because you don't know whether
it's absurdity.
Yeah, because you don't know whether anything that you do has a positive impact, negative impact, or whatever. Maybe no impact.
And no hope of finding out either.
Maybe it's based in despair.
Sure.